Welcome to the program for Wednesday, October 17th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today it's Pentagon Solutions in the 3 o'clock hour, and we are going to take a look throughout the course of the program at the strategic plan for 2013 through 2018 for the Defense Information Systems Agency. And the Director of Strategic Planning and Information for DISA, Tony Montemurano, is my guest in studio today. Tony, it's great to see you again. Thanks for coming on the program. Well,
thanks for having me.
Let's start out by talking about this plan and tell me exactly what it is and what somebody will take away from it when they're finished looking at it.
Well, basically, the plan is intended for two audiences, the DISA personnel themselves, but also our various mission partners. We're trying to give everybody a sense of what our focus is, what our priorities are, and what our ultimate objectives are in support of the warfighter and the Department of Defense as a whole.
As we talked about a little bit before we went on the air, this will require a lot of foresight and a lot of flexibility and a lot of other things. How long has this plan been in the works?
Well, the plan itself is relatively new. In previous iterations, we developed campaign plans, specifically campaign plans that had a lot of detail. What we felt is we had to back out and be more visionary, look further forward. We were normally looking at 2 years forward. We're trying to look at 5 years and beyond and try to prepare ourselves and put in a foundation as to what would be necessary to adapt to what is evolving in terms of technology. So basically, that was our thought process. We wanted to give some guiding principles, if you will.
What steps did you take when you decided that was the strategy you wanted to pursue to put this plan together?
So what happened was, if most people know that during the course of the first couple of months of this year, the president, the secretary of defense, and the chairman put out guidance as far as the priorities for the department. And basically, they were geographic shifts as well as awareness of the financial challenges of the future. So taking that information along with the guiding principles of our senior leadership, namely the CIO of the department, we decided to take those larger concepts and say, all right, we're a Defense Information Systems Agency, which is a combat support agency, and our focus is getting capability to the warfighter. So what do we do? So how do we set up that path from overall guidance to actual iron on the ground to support the warfighter? So that was the beginnings and, as I say, the initial effort to get an ultimate solution.
Now, you mentioned that this is something that we'll cover, and it's right in the title, 2013 to 2018. Right. But if I think back 5 years from today to 2007 and think about the same process taking place in 2007, tremendous amount of technology advances, tremendous amount of changes in the way personnel approach technology and the way you implement it. So how did you give yourself the flexibility to watch technology evolve and to work with that evolution as it happened and yet still have a plan that in 2016 and 2017 and 2018 is still going to be relevant?
Right. So the average implementer, if you will, look at the plan and say, oh, yeah, good, real fine. Because generally speaking, a lot of these are concepts, general directions, increasing bandwidth. Oh, that's a no-brainer. Okay. Getting ready for cloud solutions, again, a no-brainer. The bottom line of it all is there are some fundamental things that the Department of Defense have to come to grips with, regardless of the state of the art. Okay, the fact of the matter is we've got to come to grips with a cohesive, integrated infrastructure we call the Joint Information Environment. We have to adapt to much, much higher speed environments. There's our technology insertion for 100G technology. We have to come to grips with the Department of Defense has classified and unclassified environments that have to be bridged. And right now, our bridging mechanisms are okay, but they need to be better, more flexible, more agile. Those basic challenges are going to be there, regardless of whether we have tablets, cell phones, or Lord knows what.
So the conceptual execution is more what the focus is of this document than the individual technological implementations. Is that fair to say?
That's absolutely. And now what will happen is this will be followed up by a campaign plan that will get into more of the specifics. Larger dates, not specific dates, but it'll get into more of the specifics as to how we are going to map towards the ultimate goal, which is what we characterize as the Joint Information Environment. That'll have much, much more detail. And again, we'll make that available to industry and our mission partners to ensure they understand the types of technology that we'll be going for. And then that'll be followed up with a 2-year implementation plan, because we recognize that in 2 years, we're going to probably be making adjustments. Okay, but how are you making, what are you going to do in the next 2 years to ensure you're going towards the ultimate goal, which is the joint information environment?
Now, you alluded earlier to the strategic guidance that came out December, January. Right. Talk more about how this plan is integrated with that to provide support for what Secretary Panetta and Chairman Dempsey were talking about there.
So basically, what it tries to do, the plan tries to do, is frankly, it reiterates many of the things we at DISA have been dealing with over the years, and that is the fact that we have to adjust our target, our focus, given the geographic challenges of the day, okay? And we have to come to grips with the fact that we are facing financial reductions, okay? Now, how does DISA play its role in the Department of Defense to help the department optimize the available resources? So those two specific guiding principles were very, very important to us as we go forward, and just emphasizing that and focusing on it. One of the biggest things in our industry, if we're not focusing on something, it just sort of drifts away. So we're focusing on those two.
There's one particular segment of this called Tough Choices, and we'll dig into that later on in the program, where you talk very specifically about addressing those cost issues. Overall, what do you see the biggest difficulty in putting this together when you were in the process of preparing this? What was do you think was the hardest part of planning this or organizing it, compiling the information, any of that?
So to be very candid, the biggest issue with a document like this is for us to get buy-in within the agency. We have to ensure all of our seniors are wedded at the hip, that we all welded at the hip, that we're all in it to meet destination or to take us to destination. So the biggest thing was the socialization of the document, which is a real thing. Whenever you create a document like this, you've got to get the doers, the people that are putting the iron on the ground, to make sure that they all agree that this is the direction we have to go in. So it's a social thing more than anything.
And that's the part of all of these things that I think is at least as interesting to me as the execution part, and that's the cultural shifts that are required. You use the term come to grips with, and I have a picture in my mind of people thinking about these concepts and having a hard time. Grips implies that they're tightly holding on to something and not necessarily willing to let it go. Is that what you're seeing? Is that kind of the cultural part here?
Yeah, it exactly is. And you alluded to the tough choices. Well, part and parcel to some of the tough choices, the fact is you've spent a good many years putting a capability out there, and you're proud of that capability. And frankly, technology has moved on, so it's time to kill that capability. It's time to change your ways. It's time to come to grips with, we're going to do everything over IP and get over it. Time division multiplexing is something of the past. Industry's seen that. We need to get on with the program. So, and trying to get that across to everyone and get those folks that's been their livelihood for 10, 20 years maybe, that's the hard part. That's the focus we've got, and we're going to do it.
I had an interesting conversation with somebody along that line the other day. Mm-hmm. Was telling me about someone explaining to him some technology they had just acquired. This is somebody who's in industry now, mm-hmm. formerly in the government. And he said that he just kind of nodded his head and said, congratulations, and came away with it from the idea as though this person had just said, man, I bought the greatest 56K modems that anybody's got. And that mentality does seem to still be around, not just in DOD, but in other agencies.
Right. It exists, okay? You've got people that are wedded to the technology, and they're proud of their production, and that's good. That's wonderful. But we also have to come to grips with the fact that technology's moving on. We've got a huge cultural shift in the sense that our children are coming along, and they can master this technology that's available outside. We in the department have to come to grips with, hey, if they're doing it, we're going to have to figure out how to do this and just change our ways.
The document is fascinating. The Defense Information Systems Agency Strategic Plan plan for 2013 through 2018. We have it linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. When we come back, Tony, I want to talk about some of these strategic shifts that we've touched on and how this plan helps support them. My guest is Tony Montemurano of the Defense Information Systems Agency, and our conversation continues in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Info report brought to you by Commuter Connections.
Since the first HOV highway was built on I-395 in Virginia, the concept has spread across the country as a means to combat congestion and air pollution. Locally, two HOV ramps have closed to allow for ongoing express lanes construction. On I-95, the southbound HOV ramp to Lorton was permanently closed early this month. And for morning commuters on eastbound I-66, the left HOV ramp to the Inner Loop was closed last week. It'll reopen as an E-ZPass only ramp in December. I'm Dave Dildine.
These days, keeping your money is harder than ever. Some folks are even going to extremes like freezing money in blocks of ice, storing it under mattresses, hiding it under the litter box. We'd like to suggest something different, something easier. Sign up to Rideshare and save on gas. It'll help you keep your money.
Commuter Connections provides free ride matching and commuter services in the Washington metropolitan region. Sign up at CommuterConnections.org. That's CommuterConnections.org or call 800-745-RIDE.
Are you a loyal credit card user and your only reward is a high interest rate? Anyone can join State Department Federal Credit Union and take advantage of their Visa Platinum credit card. Just a 6.99% APR, plus earn one reward point for every dollar you spend. And there is no foreign transaction or balance transfer fees. Visit sdfcu.org. Annual percentage rate is based on evaluation of applicants' credit. SDFCU is federally insured by the NCUA.
It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's neither one, but a hero just the same. It's a federal worker giving to United Way of the National Capital Area and its charities. She pulls someone out of harm's way with every payroll contribution. He champions the people in his community with every CFC charity he designates. When you choose CFC code 31408 and give through payroll contributions, you're changing the life of someone in need. Amazing things happen when we stand united.
Life is long and filled with challenges. Navigating these can be difficult, but it doesn't have to be. Hi, this is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has been leading military personnel through difficult times to a more secure future by offering the right products and services at the right time for the best price. Our low-cost life insurance and personal approach allow us to help you plan wisely and feel comfortable that your family will be taken care of. Our unparalleled survivor assistance services will allow your family to take a deep breath and relax knowing we'll take care of everything. When you choose AFMA, you choose a partner who will provide guidance, simple solutions, and personalized care. Our life insurance policies are available to all members of the Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or find us online at AFMA.com today. That's AAFMAA.com.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Thursday's Federal Drive. We'll be broadcasting live from the AFSEA Health IT Day. Hear the latest developments in treatment of traumatic brain injury. It's all happening at the Military Health Service. Plus, FEMA stages a drill to see how things would work in a major earthquake. We'll find out what's happening during the Southeast Shakeout. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're taking essentially a tour today on Pentagon Solutions. We're going through the Defense Information Systems Agency's strategic plan for 2013 through 2018 with Tony Montemurano of DISA. And one of the things that we talked about in the first segment, Tony, was the strategic shift that the Pentagon is undergoing. And you address that very directly in this document. You talk about how DISA is posturing to support, this document says, DOD's strategic shift to rebalance global efforts toward the Asia-Pacific region. There are eight shift points in particular that you address. Which of these are the ones that we should know the most about, do you think?
I think the most important one to everyone should be the DOD Joint Information Environment Synchronization efforts. The JIE, as we refer to it, is the effort on the part of the department to bring its various networks together. That's networks from the physical layer up to the application layer. Bring them together in one synchronized environment. This will enable many things. First thing and foremost important is it'll enhance information sharing, the number one thing we have to provide our warfighters today. But the second thing it does is by bringing things together, it allows Cyber Command the opportunity to command and control the environment and fight the environment in the event of attack. So this is the largest thing we're working within, and this is across the department, the services, and DISA. All of us have a major role in trying to bring this whole thing together. We, DISA, sponsor the joint, the Information Environment's Technical Synchronization Office, given our background. So we're working that specific piece. But the larger issue is the JIE. We've got to bring it all together. It's in the nation's best interest from a security perspective, an effectiveness perspective, and an efficiencies perspective. So this is big business in the department, and it's got a lot of energy behind it.
Now, you only have to go out to Annapolis to one Navy Air Force football game to see that rivalries still exist among these components of the military. So anytime I see the word joint, my question is, how are the components doing at wanting to work together to share what they have?
So I think in the past, there's been a lot of resistance because we've had, because we all have different budgets. But what's happened is the leaders of the department services have just come from conflict, and specifically the J6s of the world were in the battlefield where they've had to try to integrate various solutions, and they recognize you have to be able to fight joint. They've come back, and now those are the leaders of the various military departments. They see the importance of joint. So I think that hurdle is being overcome. We're not there yet. There are a lot of iron majors out there. But the fact of the matter is the sixes, the leadership say it, that if we're not working together, we're not going to succeed.
And is it your sense that that's generational sufficiently, that as the leadership continues to mature and turnover continues as it naturally does, that that will gel even more as it has filtered down?
I think that is true. I think what's happened is the momentum's building, okay? And then plus, again, back to the point about the security. We can't fight independently. If we're not fighting together, and in the cyber environment, we're all in it together, and we bridge these infrastructures together. The fact of the matter is that they have to be fought or protected in a common environment from a cost perspective, but more specifically from an effectiveness perspective. We have to be able to protect the environment, and you can't protect 25 environments with 35 different solutions. You've got to bring it together in some synchronized fashion, and that's what this JIE is going to do, and I think the momentum's there. You can see it throughout the department. Most of us all know what it is.
The Joint Information Environment Technical Synchronization Office will live at DISA, but there will be some cooperation there with Rob Carey and his team at Terry Takai and the team at DOD. Rob was just on the program yesterday talking about some of the work, the things that his team is involved with.
Absolutely, we're certainly engaged with the DOD CIO, but more importantly, the services have representation inside the JTSO. So this entire effort is a joint effort from its creation on into its implementation. So this is not a DISA effort or a CIO effort. This is a joint effort. And it's spawned, by the way, out of discussions from our tank. Our operational commanders are the ones that have stood up and said, I need this, or we need this.
And I bet that's the greatest driver of getting something done inside DOD,
Absolutely.
Right?
When the four stars say we're going to do it, all right, now we're on the go.
Another element that I see here on this list of strategic shifts that I think is interesting is the mention of cloud services, DOD right. cloud services. There are two bullets under it, cloud broker and cloud infrastructure and services. What are we seeing there?
So what is happened is of course the cloud technology is here to stay. We can argue as to some of its attributes, but the bottom line of it all is we're really taking a look at the internet itself and trying to figure out how to take those attributes, those absolutely incredible attributes, and adapt them to the military environment. And that's the cloud service. So what we're trying to do inside of the department is ensure we have those standardized services available. And we at DISA, we do it in our enterprise computing centers, but there's also some done in the services. So we're trying to bring that together. so that's available and in some standardized fashion. But the one that's more interesting or groundbreaking is this cloud broker role. The DoD-CIO directed DISA to take on the cloud broker role, where DISA will take on cloud requirements and, through some algorithm we're still in the process of developing, decide which way the solution should go. And in that decision process, they may go to a DISA-provided service, that they may go to commercial service. The fact of the matter is, some of our requirements should be satisfied in the commercial environment. But others, they have the certain requirements or attributes that must be satisfied inside of the department or in a private environment. So that's something we're working on, and that's going to be a big business for us as we go forward. Big business in the sense of large effect.
And you kind of anticipated my next question, which was, will what each particular application does or how it fulfills the mission dictate whether it's something that you keep in-house or that goes outside?
That's exactly right. It's the specific requirement, okay? It's value to the – it's flexibility – to be used, it's our ability or a need to monitor it. All of those will come into play. One of the things, and we may talk about this later, that we have to come to grips with is that the Department of Defense has this need for both security, a certain level of security, and a need for NetOps. Okay, something that's not commonly understood in industry. NetOps is something that if something goes down, a service goes down, you complain to the vendor, it comes back online. In the Department of Defense, when the service goes down, okay, the 3-star or the 4-star that's impacted is not interested in the fact that he just got it back. He wants to, or she wants to know, why did it go down, and what are you, DISA, doing to preclude it going down again? It's a slightly different environment, so our need to understand the dynamics, understand the user experience, is a little bit more extensive than industry has to handle.
Yeah, I would imagine that the 99.9, however far you take them out, still isn't quite good enough given the needs of the people fulfilling missions in the agency.
The only people that use 99.9999 are engineers. The reality is there's only two types of systems. Systems that have gone down or will go down. Okay, we're always going to have outages. Okay, and the important thing is that we can first of all detect the outage and quickly remediate it. If you don't mind a little bit of a comment, the fact of the matter is we're a very impatient culture. We are trained to follow things on the National Football League, especially this time of year. And when the halfback's running down the field and he steps in or out and whatever, the first thing you get is 17 camera angles. So that 3-star that was watching it, okay, sees that. He goes to work the following day and sees a major outage. So he wants 17 camera angles. Well, sorry, Charlie, we're not there. But that's the user base we have to come to grips with.
There are 4 strategic goals in this plan. We've been talking actually about the strategic shift points, and you can read all 8 of those at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, I want to talk about these strategic goals, each of them briefly, and get a sense of where they're headed and how they might have shifted. Tony Montemurano of DISA is my guest on Pentagon Solutions today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
This week's Experts in Health topic is the flu vaccine, featuring Dr. Peter Kadlecek, an infectious disease physician with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at Kaiser Permanente's Capitol Hill Medical Center.
Flu season is almost here. That means it's time for your annual flu shot. Influenza is a serious disease that can lead to hospitalization and, in some cases, death. Between October and May, flu viruses circulate throughout our communities. An important way to fight against influenza is to get an annual flu vaccine, particularly for those who are at high risk for developing complications should they get sick. These include people with chronic medical conditions like asthma and diabetes, pregnant women, and people over 65 years old. At Kaiser Permanente, we are the best in the region at ensuring adults receive their flu shots.
Dr. Kadlecek was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian Magazine. For more information, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors. Flu shot for adult rate as reported in 2011 HEDIS.
Do you hear that? That's a cuttlefish. Ars Raytheon sees it the future of infrared technology. By studying how cephalopods manipulate light, we're driving innovation in IR imaging. With systems that are lighter, use less power, and deliver revolutionary clarity. After all, when your mission is innovation, your inspiration can come from anywhere. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Not spreading the flu. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Nobody plans to spread the flu, but lots of us do anyway. One reason is that people are infectious literally before they know it. At the National Institutes of Health's Clinical Center, its research hospital, infectious disease specialist Tara Palmore tells how easy it is, even if you're otherwise healthy.
Most healthy adults can infect others one day before symptoms develop. Even if they stay home when they get sick, they may already have transmitted influenza.
That's why all Clinical Center employees who work with patients are required to get immunized, and why other people should as well. Dr. Palmore notes that for people ages 65 and older, there's a higher dose vaccine to help stimulate the immune response that normally weakens as people age. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Pending legislation, federal budget cuts, contracting efficiencies, contract management best practices, acquisition trends, and the relationship of government and industry will be discussed at NCMA's upcoming 31st Annual Government Contract Management Conference, November 5th and 6th in Washington, D.C. Hear from Ted Leonsis, CEO of Monumental Sports and Entertainment, Frank Kendall, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, and General George Casey, former U.S. Army Chief of Staff. Learn more at ncmahq.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Tony Montemarano on Pentagon Solutions. He's Director of Strategic Planning and Information at the Defense Information Systems Agency, and we're talking about DISA's strategic plan for 2013 through 2018. And I mentioned before the break, Tony, there are four strategic goals in this plan, and anybody who wants to see those four, I'll just read them real quickly. Strategic goal one, evolve the joint information environment. Two, provide joint command and control and leadership support. Three, operate and assure the enterprise. And four, optimize department investments. Of those four, obviously you can't rank them. They're all four important, or they wouldn't be in here. But are there issues here that maybe have developed or changed since the last time that the agency evaluated them, or are there some of these that are maybe more challenging to implement or more difficult, whatever?
Generally speaking, these goals are consistent with what the agency has focused on over the years. However, when it comes to goal number four, we really haven't sat down and said, okay, this is really what our value proposition is. The first three, we're providing a service to the department at large. The fourth one is we have additional services in terms of engineering support, contracting support, spectrum management, for example, where we provide value add to the department. We can relieve the military departments from performing certain functions, and they can put their critical dollars towards tactical solutions and the like. So in the area of optimizing department investments, we're trying to say here is that we can help, we will provide the standards necessary to support the solutions you need, and we can be a partner with you. One of the things we're trying to push very, very hard is we have no right to compete with the military departments. We have to complement one another. We don't have the finances to compete with each other. We must complement one another. and by providing specific services that are not necessarily mainstream for the other departments, the other military departments, there we can be value-added to them. And further, we can actually bring things together, if you will, for example, bulk buys and the like, so that each one of us isn't going and buying a box. We can buy them together, and that kind of thing.
And that's your own version of strategic sourcing, it sounds like.
To a great extent, yes, it's exactly what it is.
So. You use the term value proposition, and right. it strikes me that that is a term that I'm hearing more and more, not yeah. just out of the Pentagon, but yeah. all over the government, as yeah. agencies understand better that in just about everything they do, they've got to demonstrate a return on investment or demonstrate that value proposition.
Well, yeah. And if I get in trouble now, yeah, absolutely. We all have to come to grips with it and say to ourselves, all right, what do we mean to the fight? How are we contributing? And are we necessary, or are we just doing it because we always did it? And what is our value proposition in this situation? And I think we provide a very, very key role within the department. And again, we complement the services. We complement the United States Cyber Command. We complement NSA. In our dealings with technology, and my argument is that by doing that complementary work, first of all, you're optimizing critical resources, but as importantly, you're bringing together the incredible array of talent that we have in the department. And putting it on the issue of the day.
Is that also a cultural challenge as agencies, the components and other organizations inside the Pentagon try to understand this role that you're trying to fulfill, this strategic goal of DISA?
Yeah, so I don't think for the leadership it's a cultural challenge, but I do think for the lower levels, because you have to recognize everybody has jobs, and sometimes bringing things together jeopardizes somebody's job. So you're going to have that kind of a problem. There's no question about it. But the leadership of the department sees it. We have to come together, and we have to use DISA for what its value is. We use DLA for it and NSA for it. So I think we're getting better and better. It's a work in progress, though, to say it's there.
That's my thought, though, is that when you say, hey, by the way, DISA is able to do this from mm-hmm. now on, and somebody at a component is saying, well, wait a minute. That's what I do.
That's right.
And
that's
understanding right. how that's not necessarily a bad thing right. for that component is the cultural part of it that right. I was getting at.
Well, exactly so. But it goes back to the tough choices with the workforce and whatever. One of the things we have to come to grips with, there's enough to do. There's enough to do to provide the capability necessary to defend the nation. And what we have to do is apply the resources to the problem at hand, okay, as opposed to, well, I've always done that. Well, let's leave that one be, and we'll just go hire somebody new. No, let's take that individual, retrain them. Okay, so again, there's an incredible amount of talent that's in the department. We just have to bring it together and work together.
This plan includes a technology watch list, and I would like to look at that. There are 8 points in there, and we'll talk about some of those when we come back. My guest is Tony Montemarano of the Defense Information Systems Agency, and our conversation continues in just a moment. This is Pentagon Solutions on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Agency of the Month, sponsored by ICF International.
Howard Hayes, Acting Director of the Office of Information Technology at the Indian Health Service, talks about the future of health IT.
The industry is going more toward a pay-per-performance model as opposed to a pay-by-service model. The ability to evaluate performance and to show performance is really important.
Agency of the Month, Wednesdays in October at 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
To have the greatest impact, you must tackle the most important problems. All over the world, ICF International applies strategy, science, and technology to help clients achieve measurable results, including healthier people and vibrant communities. This is ICF International, and their work helps government health programs, like those run by the National Institutes of Health, improve the quality of life. Find out how ICF's informatics, research, and communication work helps make a difference at ICFI.com.
Beth Ann Telford found out 7 years ago she had brain cancer. Her doctors told her she would never run again. But now, Telford is defying the odds. The government printing office employee recently competed in the Ironman World Championship, which includes swimming, biking, and running a marathon. What motivates Telford to keep moving forward, and how did she finish the race? Federal News Radio goes behind the scenes with Telford at a recent training session. Watch the video at federalnewsradio.com. Search Ironman. Join the Coalition for Government Procurement on October 24th and 25th for a 2-day training conference, Continuing the Dialogue, at the Crystal Gateway Marriott in Arlington, Virginia. The training will focus on understanding acquisition policy and the federal market. Hear how sequestration, declining budgets, and strategic sourcing may affect what the government buys and how they buy it. Any government and industry professional from across the procurement community should attend this event. Register now at the Coalition for Government Procurement's website, www.thecgp.org.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My Pentagon Solutions guest today is Tony Montemarano of the Defense Information Systems Agency, talking about the Defense Information Systems Agency's strategic plan for 2013 through 2018. We have a link to it now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And one of the components of this, Tony, is the technology watch list. There are eight individual technologies that you're looking at here. One in particular I wanted to ask you about. What is a cross-domain technology? What qualifies as such?
So in the Department of Defense, we have networks, intranets, you can call them, that are protected at different classification levels. The unclassified information environment, that's NIPRNet, the secret information environment, which would be the CIPRNet, and then we have coalition networks we have to deal with. That's at the GENSER level, and of course you have your intelligence networks. Well, in those networks themselves, people in the unclassified environment need to be able to exchange data with folks on the classified environment. So you have a bridging requirement. Now, normally we protect the classified environment with type 1 encryption and the unclass with a lot lower. So how do you bridge that environment? So you have these cross-domain technologies. Now, we have one-offs where you can one user on the unclass can talk to one user on the classified, and that suffices, but generally speaking, as we move forward and there's information on the unclass side that's needed on the classified or vice versa, we need to be more versatile. So we're going to be needing technologies that allow us to simply, by the entry of a URL, traverse a bridge or a cross-domain technology and get into the other environment, get the information we need, and bring it down in a safe and secure manner. So those close to this environment know it's a challenge. And now, that's for the simply unclassed to secret. In the coalition environment, you have arrangements where we can talk to one country, but that country, we can talk to country A, but that country A doesn't talk to country B, but we need to talk to them both. Well, you need that technology that will help you distinguish. Again, that's a cross-domain, security domain environment. And that gets very, very complicated. Today, we are operating some 70 different networks, bilats, trilats, multilat networks, to effect or to be able to provide the capability to be able to share. Well, the problem with that kind of a concept, you can imagine, there's the four-star general sitting there with five different boxes on his desk. That doesn't go over well. So
I can imagine.
We need this cross-domain effort.
What does that architecture look like to the degree that you have planned for it and can talk about it when you're finished?
I'll talk about functionally. You have, by tagging or some technology comparable that's trusted tagging, that these devices can make the distinction that, yep, you're allowed to talk to this entity, but you're not allowed to talk to that entity. So we'll be going down that path now. That has to be matured because there has to be a level of trust. And thus far, we haven't done really well with that. And that's one place where industry's got to stand up to the bar. It has been really a problem trying to fix this.
In what way in particular, and when you talk about industry standing up, what do you want to see them do?
No, help us with the technology that'll help us to distinguish. Right now, we get that, but we have technologies that, yes, you can distinguish, but then a man or a woman's in the loop. No, we need open, I send it to a URL, and it gets to destination, and I don't care.
Is it your sense that industry gets that and is just struggling with developing a solution, or do they not see the priority that you place on that ability, or what seems to be the holdup in your view?
I think it's hard, okay? Now, we also have to point out, and I'm not knocking industry, but you also have to recognize that industry's focus is on the commercial environment. Used to be DOD was the big dog on the block. No longer. Industry looks at the commercial environment, and when we ask for solutions, we have to recognize if it's not coming off the shelf, all right, we're paying for it. And that gets dicey, especially as you're approaching this this financial challenge that we have. So part of it's the financial part of it, but the other thing is that this is no easy solution.
Another area here that on this technology watch list that I was not as familiar with as some of the others, enterprise IDAM technologies. Right. Tell me about that.
Right, IDAM is Identity and Access Management. What we in the department have decided is we have to drive out anonymity. We can't have any bad actors roaming the network and hitting any site anonymously. So everybody that's connecting to our environment has to be identified. And once you're identified, further, you have to be able to only access those pieces of information that you have authorization to access. Like, we can go into the WikiLeaks and other things about how people have been able to get into the infrastructure and get to things that they're not necessarily authorized. With Identity and Access Management, that will be the gate. Not only do we have absolute identity on the individual, but we have those guards at the individual sites that, based upon the attributes of the individual or based upon the role of the individual, decisions would be made as to whether or not they have access to the environment. Again, a tough technology to introduce, but we've been making some good progress. For example, nobody in the department connects to the environment without what we call our CAC card, and that's delivered a lot of benefits to us and protected a lot of us.
Does the successful development of IDAM technologies make the cross-domain technology execution more complicated or make it easier when you have identity certified? You know who's doing what.
I hadn't thought about that question, but I think in general, I think it's going to make it easier, okay, because identity is part and parcel to the issue. Does that individual have authorization to go to the higher level? So, yes, I hadn't thought about it, but absolutely, Identity and Access Management will help us deal with that problem.
The mobile technologies is on this technology watch list, Tony, right. And I think everybody understands where we are when it comes to the mobile technology wave. What are the implications for DISA and for the Pentagon as a whole?
Well, the fact of the matter is the department has to come to grips with mobility. And when we say mobility, we're talking about tablets and smartphones and like. We have to recognize that the average soldier, sailor, airman entering into the service is accustomed to having data at the ready. And as soon as they get in, if they want any classified data, we give them a brick, okay? We've got to get beyond that. We have to come to grips with the fact that we have these commercial solutions out there that our soldiers and our warfighters, they need that. They expect to have it. They need it. So we have to come to grips with it. There's commercial solutions. They've been designed for the commercial environment. We have to come to grips with how to adapt them for the military utility. So with that, we've introduced the concept of mobility domain managers that are mobile device managers that are intended to essentially act as a guarding function to provide the security and bring it in. We're currently operating pilots. There are multiple pilots. I myself am participating in the good pilot, where I have a tablet and a cell phone, and I'm able to access data inside of the department. And we're going to be expanding upon that. But the critical issue is not only we want to do that, we also want to do it for the classified environment. So it's one thing to protect it to the unclassified environment, but we have to protect it at the classified environment. That requires increased protection mechanisms. We're working very, very closely with the National Security Agency to get that technology out there. The important thing to come to grips with is this is not a development effort. It can't be a development effort. The department can't go around developing smartphones. We've got to take commercially available solutions and adapt them to our environment. That's a challenge, but we're getting good cooperation from industry, and we think we're gonna beat it.
And the good news, I think, is that you're not the only agency, even at the level of import that DOD is, to say that, because people are starting to understand the point of me having this device is not having the device; it's what I can get on it and what I can do with it to meet the mission of the agency.
That's right. It's absolutely our goal. Ultimately, is access to the environment using any device from anywhere. And the smartphones, it's, of course, that's the answer of the day.
All right. The specter that is hanging over all of this, this entire strategic plan, in my view, we can talk about it more when we come back, though, is the budget situation that not just the Pentagon, but everybody is in. And when we come back from the break, we'll talk about some of the tough choices. That's exactly what you've called them in this document, what some of those are and how you're proposing to deal with them. Tony Montemurano is my guest from the Defense Information Systems Agency, talking about DISA's strategic plan for 2013 through 2018. We'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Life is long and filled with challenges. Navigating these can be difficult, but it doesn't have to be. Hi, this is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has been leading military personnel through difficult times to a more secure future by offering the right products and services at the right time for the best price. Our low-cost life insurance and personal approach allow us to help you plan wisely and feel comfortable that your family will be taken care of. Our unparalleled survivor assistance services will allow your family to take a deep breath and relax knowing we'll take care of everything. When you choose AFMA, you choose a partner who will provide guidance, simple solutions, and personalized care. Our life insurance policies are available to all members of the Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or find us online at AFMA.com today. That's AAFMAA.com.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General Hosted Payload Program. That's spacedelivered.com.
Pending legislation, federal budget cuts, contracting efficiencies, contract management best practices, acquisition trends, and the relationship of government and industry will be discussed at NCMA's upcoming 31st Annual Government Contract Management Conference, November 5th and 6th in Washington, D.C. Hear from Ted Leonsis, CEO of Monumental Sports and Entertainment, Frank Kendall, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, and General George Casey, former U.S. Army Chief of Staff. Learn more at ncmahq.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're looking at the Defense Information Systems Agency's strategic plan for 2013 through 2018. And my guest is Tony Montemurano of DISA. And as I mentioned before, the thing that kind of overlays everything that the Pentagon is doing right now is money. And you directly get at that. It's not an illusion. It's not dancing around it. You go straight to it in a part of this called tough choices. And you're right. We'll make those tough decisions that enable us to better deliver enterprise capabilities. What are the components of those tough choices? I think everybody knows what's driving them, but what are the results that the warfighter may see or not see, which is really, I guess, the ultimate, outcome here?
You know, the bottom line is we don't want the warfighter to see anything in terms of reduction of capability. If anything, we want him to see more and more capability. We in the IT community have to come to grips with the fact that IT is a force multiplier, and we've got to press that issue, and that's one of the ways that we will continue to support, given the austere funding environment. Our tough choices are basically around people, infrastructure, and programs. From a people perspective, we have got to come to grips with our people have to migrate or evolve to the newer technologies, and we have to have the commitment to train the people. To include, by the way, the cyber war fighters, this environment is growing and growing. The hostile environment of the cyber networks, we have got to train our war fighters in a way that they're more effective and they can detect our adversarial operations. We haven't done as good a job as we need to. We need to focus on it. When it comes to infrastructure, we have to come to grips with there's an awful lot of facilities out there that have to be dealt with. This has been an agonizing environment. We are trying to figure out what we can close down to wrap up. We've decided, and again, after some agonizing work, that we're going to close down two facilities, Chambersburg in Pennsylvania and Dayton, Ohio. We have two facilities. We have to close that down. Now, the good thing is that we have a good, strong people program at DISA that we're very proud of. And we're going to be repositioning each of those people, retooling them, and there's a few that'll be retiring. But the bottom line here is we've got to make those choices and recognize those choices impact people. Okay. And lastly, programs. And I alluded to this a little bit before, and that is we tend to embrace our programs and recognize that life has moved on, or we're not recognizing that life has moved on, and we have to kill those programs. And there's always seemed to be somebody out there that still needs it. So we have to come to grips with that. And I will tell you our overall strategy there is if you still need it, you're going to pay for it as a one-off, okay, and keep it going there. And all of a sudden their requirement tends to dwindle when you offer it that way. The bottom line is we have to stand up to these tough choices and be there. And remember, the ultimate goal is support for the warfighter.
We're almost out of time. I'm very grateful for your time today. I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's a fascinating document. You mentioned earlier in the program that you'll be following this up with campaign plans, and I'd love to have you come on as they're released and talk about them and what we can expect from them. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Tony Montemarano is Director of Strategic Planning and Information for the Defense Information Systems Agency. DISA's 2013 through 2018 strategic plan is linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Later this afternoon, we'll archive my conversation with Tony there, and you can find all of our Pentagon Solutions conversations at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.